Accession number 23223, Reel 2.
Major Bauer, Reel 2. I was asking you, what happened if the soldiers didn't take their saline solution?
Not in a heat stroke, a very high temperature, and a collapse or something, or... And you're heat stone, trying to think what happened then. I think you could have a fit, couldn't you? You could ultimately have a fit, in other words. But, it was very serious, anyhow. It was dire, but anyhow.
Were there any other routine precautions that had to be taken to keep them in good order?
Oh, well, of course, was the taking of the atropine or mepocrine, wasn't it, which made you yellow, the anti-malarial tablet. That was remarkably good. And if you did take it, you could still get malaria, but it certainly cut it down quite a lot, though. Oh, big difference. And that's why I never understood how the Japs got on, because they hadn't got any. They had plenty of quinine there. I know, they had plenty of quinine. But that wasn't so efficient. It was very efficient in treating it, but not so efficient in preventing it, as far as I remember. Long time ago, I'm sure you could speak to some experts and give you much better answers to these than I am.
Eventually, I think you were going up, you were going forward, and you were in the transport, and you said you were going from... You drove from Jansi to Sylhet.
That's right, yeah. It was a very nice journey. That was through the north, through India, Calcutta, and so forth, yeah.
What were the ambulances like? What sort of vehicles were they?
It was an army truck, really, wasn't it? It was a sort of converted army truck. I was stretched a room at the back, I thought. Nothing very special. No, they're quite small. Mm-hmm.
What equipment did they have in them?
Oh, gosh. Very straight, I suppose. I mean, there was no oxygen, I don't think, or anything of that sort. No, it was just... I honestly don't know what the medical equipment would have been, but whether there were some basic... You're talking about ambulances, you see. I mean, I don't know what they carried. I honestly don't know what they did carry. No.
Were these driven by Europeans or by Indians?
Yes, these were driven by members of the regiment. In the regiment. My driver had been all through North Africa, Palestine, the lot. They'd been through the lot, having been in the army at the beginning of the war. And some of our Bedfords were regulars, quite a number of them. And I know when he was driving me up there, he'd already been 5 years abroad. So they did a long time away from their families.
What did you have in the way of personal kit? You mentioned you had boots that hadn't been broken in, so you did some walking to do that.
Nothing really much. I mean, you had a pack, and that was it, wasn't it? And a bush hat, which I've still got there. Nothing very special. Fortunately, I had an issue of gas capes at one point, and they were marvellous for really heavy rain. You put that on, and that would keep your pack dry too. And they were very good. But unfortunately, not everybody had them. I had them as an MO, I had one, but some of them didn't. They always just try and sleep in the jungle, lie on the ground, soaking wet. I think they were pretty tough going, that was, for the chaps, most of the chaps. Very tough indeed.
What about your medical kit, your personal medical kit? What did you have in that?
I'm not sure I had a personal medical kit. I don't remember particularly what it was. I mean, honestly, there you are. I don't remember. Can't have been anything remarkable now.
And you also refer in your narrative to Calcutta being full of Americans with Nauch girls.
Well, there were a lot of them about there, certainly. but I remember going to having a meal at this English Breton Hobbs, Major Hobbs, wasn't it? An English pub, that was a great place, that was wonderful. No Americans.
No Americans.
Did I mention that?
I think you did, yes, yeah. But there was a place where there were no Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But I would hasten to say how efficient the Americans were. I mean, in my knowledge of the... We had these light planes, Cochrane's light planes, they were very good pilots, the Americans, magnificent pilots, and really good. And I think the Americans are so efficient, much more efficient than we are. Now they're still efficient, aren't they? In the Air Force, and they're all very efficient.
Well, they have a great deal of energy.
Yeah, it seems to be combined with know-how, though, isn't it? You see, that's the point. A bit of stick in the mud, I think.
They might be more interested in trying out new ideas. We tend to be rather conservative and cautious. And that has its advantages as well. I think you were at the airbase at Sillett, and you said that the airfield was a rush job. What did the airfield consist of?
A rush job, I think.
It had been built in a hurry.
Is that the one in Burma, or is that the one...
At Sillett.
I can't remember particularly about Sillett, but whatever it would be, usually made by knocking down the buns between the rice paddy, didn't they? As long as it was dry, it was all right.
What happened when it was wet?
Well, you asked me that, and I don't know. It must have had a lot of rain. It must have been much more difficult, that's all I can say to Because when I flew into Burma, it hadn't started raining at that point. And as I walked out, I didn't have a plane on the way back, so I don't know.
You were saying that at this airfield, you were 6 weeks at the airfield in March 1944, that your medical unit didn't really have much to do. What was in your unit? You were the regimental medical officer.
There was a senior medical officer who was a brigade senior.
Yeah.
In charge of all the medical supplies and general in charge, I suppose. And I was just an ordinary assistant doctor, that's all.
And you mentioned that there were some men who were sick, that there was a disease called mite scrub typhus. Do you remember that?
Well, we had typhus undoubtedly, yes. That was certainly very serious. Yeah.
What were the symptoms of this illness?
Mainly, as far as I remember, very high temperature, as far as I remember, but I don't know whether there was a rash. I think you could get a rash with it, I think, and I know because I went to join the Bedfords because their MO had been evacuated with this typhus. Same as the CO. He died of it. It was quite a serious illness, yes.
How did you treat it?
There wasn't any treatment as such, you see. I mean, you would sponge them down, I suppose. If they got a high temperature, the fever went too high. So all you could do, you couldn't really do very much. No.
It sounds like supportive treatment rather than curative.
Definitely not curative. I don't even know whether there would be a curative treatment even nowadays, because it's a form of virus, and sort of that type of thing, isn't it? But no, I don't know.
You, at a place near Agarthala, a permanent air supply base, and there you had, I think, a medical inspection room.
Yeah.
How was that set up? What was in it?
It would just be a bamboo basher, wouldn't it? I mean, nothing special again, nothing special.
No equipment as such.
Well, there must have been something, I suppose, but I'm very vague about this, I know. I've never had to think about it since then, and I didn't write anything about it in my thing, did I? So it can't have been anything very remarkable, you see. No.
And you mentioned there you were packing medical supplies for the columns.
That's right, yeah. That's what they do, yeah.
What would a column take into the field in the way of medical supplies?
Well, we had the medical supplies were, the medical part was carried in three mules. I think. Still around. Dressings and all that things, I suppose, yes. Just trying to think what the other would be, what the three would be. I don't mention it, I don't suppose I say it, because I'm not sure what they would have been.
Yeah,
somewhere, I'm sure you can find out from somewhere, but there were three donkeys, three mules. And, but what they contained, I don't know, a number of boxes. Oh, there were some, of course, there were certain instrument boxes and things, of course, for operating and that type of thing, yes, certainly, yes.
So was there a standardised field surgical kit?
I imagine there probably was.
Bone saws and things like that.
Hmm?
With bone saws and things like that.
I imagine so, but yeah. I wasn't a surgeon, so I don't know. But there was at one point when we did have a small hospital going at the top of the Kaunsalai part. I know that the other chap was a surgeon. He was a colonel. Yeah, but he had been a surgeon. He knew surgery, so he did the surgery. And I did the anaesthetics.
Mm.
And that what the internet was the fun of. That was great fun, because the anaesthetic was chloroform, ampules of chloroform. And that, of course, had gone out, because this wonderful anaesthetic was Queen Victoria liked. Marvellous. You put a few drops on, the patient went down, and stopped putting drops, and they started coming up. And you just kept on giving enough drops to keep the patient down. The only trouble was that if you give for every 1,000 or so patients you give, I'm not sure what the actual number was, the liver would fail and it was fatal. So, but that's why ether and these other things came in later on. But it was a lovely anaesthetic to give that. I remember enjoying giving that.
So you've got the surgical kit, you've got an anaesthetic kit, presumably.
I don't know that. There was no anaesthetic kit. No, it was just a few bottles of chloroform.
Just the ampules, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what medicines you took into the field?
Oh, well, supplies of quinine, that's the main thing. Intravenous quinine was the thing that really saved the job. Mm. An ampule of 10 cc's of quinine straight into the vein, that was the thing for for acute malaria, that was very good indeed.
So hypodermic syringe with the quinine, and that would bring the temperature down, and
well, you're all right then for a day or two, probably. And you may ask, what syringe did we use? Will we boil them up? I must have boiled them up, I suppose. I don't know.
Well, disposable syringes weren't available.
No, they weren't. We must have boiled them up, I suppose. But I don't remember anything being boiled up. I was so new, I didn't know what was going on anyhow. I was very, very lucky in the medical unit, in the column, because there was a Corporal French. He was a regular.
Yes.
And he'd been in the medical unit in the Bedford before the war. But he knew everything. He knew all the men. And it was great to have him. Really, I saved my bacon, I think.
So when you went off with the column, you had Corporal French, and who else was in the on the sort of medical team with you? So was it just you and the corporal, or did you have others?
Nobody else. No.
What about stretcher bearers? Did you have any of them in the column?
Well, you didn't have stretcher bearers in the columns, no. Of course not. Yeah. And everybody in the column was a fighting man, theoretically. They all had their rifles and so forth. There were no other, they were all part of platoons, weren't they? Either recce platoon or mortar platoon, and things. I'm not quite sure. You've got their books will tell you all these things, aren't they? You read the books, haven't you? Some of the books. Yeah.
And I've talked to John Riggs, who was on the column, of course.
Yeah. He's got a very good memory, very good.
Do you remember what you took with you when you went off with the column? What you carried?
Well, you carried your 5 days' supplies, didn't you? K rations. Spare socks and that sort of thing. Spare shirt. Not very much, really, I don't suppose, really. You asked me something, so I can't tell you exactly what was in the pack. It seemed to be fairly full up, but the rations could take, I think, could take quite a lot of the pack out there.
You mentioned that you carried a weapon. What was your weapon?
That was the American carbine, a marvellous weapon. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, I never had to use it, but I had complete confidence with it, because I'd done a shooting at school, and I was quite good at school shooting, actually.
Had you had a chance to fire the weapon?
No, the carbine, no, no, you had? But it was a very simple mechanism. It was a very simple thing. Very good indeed. It was a fairly lightweight rifle, in other words. And everybody wanted a carbine if they could get it.
Now, in theory, you were supposed to be a non-combatant and therefore not armed. So there was a...
Well, we all carried... Well, with the chaps, we would have been competent as far as they were concerned. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't care who we were.
You got to... When you flew out, I think you landed at Broadway.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So whatever it says there, I can't remember.
Do you remember what there was? You mentioned there was a hospital at Broadway. Do you remember how that was organised? And
didn't I say so? Well, it must have been, I suppose, but I can't remember it particularly. No.
Another thing you noticed, you said that you saw some Burmese being interrogated.
I do remember that. I wrote it down particularly. They were getting pretty short shrift. What happened to them? I don't know whether they're considered to be traitors or what. I don't know, but they were in trouble anyhow.
Who was actually interrogating them?
Oh, one of the Burmese officers, presumably. Burmese speaking. Well, the Burma rifles, probably.
What was happening then? Were they being beaten up, or...?
What have I actually said?
You said they're being given a forceful interrogation.
Maybe, I don't know. I can't tell you. I wouldn't like to go into a witness box to say exactly what happened now. No.
And then you had an encounter with an officer who you thought was not really fit for being in the field. He was... A Gurkha, and you said he was not up to the job.
I don't really know. I just he gave me that impression, and he all seemed very dithery. And I don't know any more than what I've said there now. It's too long ago to say. I wouldn't like to be quoted anywhere.
No. Well, I just wondered if you remember how it was he gave the impression that he wasn't really.
Just gave the impression that. I would hate to besmirch any Gurkha, really, because they're after first class.
Oh, yes, but no one is perfect. They're always the odd. And another thing you mentioned is that although at times people got absolutely exhausted with the life and the marching, they didn't want to be flown out when they were at the end of their resource. That because there was a great sense of pride in being in a column, quite a lot of those who were physically exhausted didn't want to give up and be flown out as casualties.
If I said that in this, which I'd written in the extract, it must have been so. See, this is the great thing about this, quite honestly. It's written so soon afterwards, it's not made up, you see.
Do you remember meeting any of the local Burmese population? What they were like?
Not as such, because I wasn't a Burmese speaker. I didn't know. My nearest encounter with them was one I was with the headquarters, with the platoon, the column commander one night, and we went into one of the bashes to look at the wire set up. When we woke up in the morning, a whole lot of children at the end, they're all covered in smallpox. But none of us got it, fortunately. Smallpox vaccination was very, very successful.
Was smallpox very prevalent in Burma?
Obviously it was at that time, yes, must have been, yeah.
Were these children in a very bad way?
Well, probably, I don't know. They used to die of these things, didn't they? But they'd got a good old smallpox rash, it was a serious illness to have, so I can't say more than that, can I?
When you were actually in column on the march, you were more or less in the centre of the column.
Well, I was at the rear.
You were at the rear?
The medical was always near the rear, that's right. Yeah, with the rear platoon behind us, but in front of the rear platoon. And so that you knew what was going on with the column. I mean, if it was being ill or dropping out, you soon see them.
Oh, you could sweep them up, I suppose.
Well, the idea was, you had to keep them going. That was the main thing. Either you treated them and got them going. I mean, I don't think, as far as I know or remember, I don't think we left anybody behind. But I know at one point going over the hills towards the railway valley, we did come across a column where they were, had either, when they were ill, of course, or something. They'd been left anyhow. They'd been left. Mm. And they were pretty serious at the time. Mm. And you had to be a sort of slave driver, literally, sometimes, to keep them going.
When you came across these chaps, was there anything you could do about that?
Well, some of them, they would treat some of them, yes, and some of them you managed to get lay on some stretcher bearers or somebody to take them along, or...
Mm.
I think they managed to get some Burmese or something, do some stretcher bearing, I think. Kachins. Wouldn't be Burmese, would they be? They'd be Kachins or something.
Be tribal in that area.
Yeah, yeah. Because the Burmese were, generally speaking, anti-British, weren't they?
What sort of treatment could you give these people then? I mean, do you remember what you would give them? Get them up and going?
It depends what you thought they had the matter with them, wouldn't it? Whether it was... there were two things basically. One, you could treat for acute dysenteries. You could, immediate dysentery, you could have emetine, injections of emetine, or the ordinary bacterial dysentery, which is the sort of thing you have in this country sometimes, food poisoning type of thing. That was a sulfonamide, sulfaguanidine. And there was false malaria.
You described the treatment for malaria as being the treatment for malaria as the injection of quinine,
that's the
intravenous.
The main thing,
When you gave the sulfanamide for the bacterial dysentery, was that an injection or was that
by mouth? Yeah, that was,
Did that have a swift effect?
Well, I don't suppose it was swift, no, but obviously great help anyhow.
Were there any precautions you could take against dysentery?
None at all. Well, I don't think so, no. I mean, you want to wash your hands or none of that sort. No, of course you couldn't.
What about water? Could you do anything to try and ensure was clean?
You had your water tablets, sterilizing tablets, which were chlorine to a tablet. I don't know. Now you ask me something again, exactly what was in them. I thought it was just chlorine of some sort. And you, every time you got some more water, you had to make sure you put your water tablets in them. And they certainly that did save a lot of trouble.
Yes. You said you were with the Black Watch for 10 days or so.
That's moving. when I arrived in Burma at the, whatever the camp was. The bedroom had just left, unfortunately. And so I was attached to the Black Watch, and I was very lucky because there was a very good Canadian MO there. Very helpful. And I learned all my treatment, anything about from him. But I would have hadn't been for him, I would have been very stuck at him.
This is Captain Chesney.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it gave me a chance too to get my feet going because I hadn't. I was murder walking through the enormous houses at the balls of my feet.
Yeah.
And going through water was murder sometimes. When you first got into the water, sting like anything.
Could you do anything about that to help your feet?
No, you just had to carry on. Eventually, you carry on long enough, they healed themselves.
So this is really a matter of willpower, isn't it? Mind over matter.
Well, you've got to keep going. You all had to keep going. That was the main thing, yeah. And
did you or anyone else in these columns do a foot inspection every day?
Oh, no, I shouldn't think so. No, I've never heard of it. I can't remember. No, I'm sure there's no question. For what reason would you do it, you see? I mean,
When you're on the march, in theory, you're supposed to inspect feet every day and give treatment, you know, such as draining blisters, things like that, and so on, if you're route marching. It's a sort of standard military procedure.
I did. Of course, when I joined them, they'd already been in several months. Mm. I joined them anyhow. But,
Do you remember that whether or not there were serious problems with people falling out with trouble with their feet in the Black Watch or the Bedfords?
No, I don't remember as such. I mean, were there any serious troubles? I mean, they weren't having jangling of the feet or anything, no. I think some of the foot trouble was the same as trench feet in the First War. You know, you can get ulcers and things on the feet, on the skin, or something. But
would that be caused by the damp?
Because they're wet all the time, so yeah.
Presumably you could get things like fungal infections as well if you were always moist.
Minor thing, I imagine, but it's terrible. I can't remember that sort of detail.
You did say that with the Black Watch, you learned how to be comfortable, you know, all sorts of things. Do you remember any of those tricks of the trade that you learned about how to be comfortable in the field?
Did I use the word comfortable, didn't I?
Yes, learn how to be comfortable.
I don't know what I meant by that quite offhand, but let's see what it says here. But
what arrangements did you make for overnight stops once you were on the move?
Well, let's see. The column of the intelligence officer, or the... I think he was a... No, I'm not quite sure whether it was him who did it or not, but... Somebody would have found out where the column was to stop, the best place for the column to stop. And the platoons would be distributed around. The platoons changed position each day. One day they'd be a leading column one day, and the next time they'd be a bit further back and so on. And I know that the machine guns and the mules and all these things would be at the centre. So they were not surprised so easily to call it one surprise, and the others on the periphery. I think I mentioned now that the Leicesters were caught a bivouac, weren't they? And the Japs rushed down the hill and really caused havoc with them in the camp.
I think you said that some of them had to be left behind with the West Africans.
That was to get them carried to when they were coming to join us near the lake.
Yeah,
near the Kinsale Pass, that's right, yes. Yeah. That's right, yes.
What was the condition of those who'd been left behind?
I don't know. I don't remember particularly about them, seeing them particularly.
What sort of ration did you have? Was this the American ration?
It's the American K rations, yeah.
What did you think of that?
It got intensely boring after weeks, of course, but I mean, really, obviously they were quite good, really. I mean, it kept you going anyhow. And occasionally you'd get a free drop of something extra. It was a great joy, something like tinned fruit or something, rice or something. You'd get extra rations were dropped every now and then when there was a chance to do so.
You were mentioning earlier on that you had you thought that malnutrition might have been a cause of some difficulties on these operations. What would those signs be? What were the effects?
Well, skin troubles, ulcers and breaking out in the legs and that sort of thing. I'm sure if a nephew were not, I mean, I don't.